This is the July 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Alan Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Aaron Curtis at Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, Joel Carlin, he's at Western Grain Milling, he's in Fresno, California today, and Chuck Shelby is at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us on the web anytime you'd like at willag.org. Just click and play at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast application. Search for Commodity Week. Let's start by getting a list of items that we might want to discuss for the day. Ellen Dearden, I think I'll start with you there at AgReview in Morton.
I'd like to talk about Chinese pork production and its rebound and what that means, not just for pork, but also for corn and beans.
Aaron Curtis?
Just looking to see maybe what's on the horizon here to help this corn price much after last Friday's sell-off and then the continuation earlier in the week on Monday. Is there anything really left here this summer to get the corn market, at least futures-wise, perked up much here as we head towards harvest?
Joel Carlin in California.
I'd like to talk about the incredible rally in block cheese prices from record lows to record highs in the space of 2 months.
And Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities.
I'd like to talk about the influence the funds have had in this market in the last 2 weeks and the significance of what they've been doing and what it may impact prices as we go forward.
Joel, it's been a while since we've had you on the program. You are in at Western Grain Milling in Fresno, but Western, I know, is not there. You're somewhere in the Central Valley. Western is where between Bakersfield and Fresno, but I don't recall exactly where now.
Yeah, it's about 40 miles south of Fresno. It's called Western Milling, the largest feed company in the state, and we're about right in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley. We service, essentially dairy cows from, Bakersfield all the way up to Stockton and, among other things. So we work with, dairy producers. We also work with the crop farmers, cotton farmers, specialty crops. We have livestock accounts. We have a pet food division. We have a layer division. So a pretty integrated and diversified company.
And if I remember correctly, you watch the ethanol in California pretty closely as well.
Yeah, we used to own an ethanol plant. It was one of the Pacific ethanol plants, but it's we had one in Goshen, and then we used to do the marketing for the Yara plant. But that's since shuttered. The ethanol, the destination plants really didn't work out that well in the state. There's maybe a couple of them running right now.
And I want to come back to that because I want to hear that story. But you wanted to talk about block cheese and a price rally there. What's been happening?
Well, we've had a tremendous rally in cheese prices, which has been very supportive to class three milk, which is based off of cheese and whey prices. And as I call up the chart here. Right in the middle of the pandemic, right in the middle of April, on April 15th, we had dropped really from about $1.90 per block in the middle of March to $1, which is essentially the lowest price ever in the middle of March. And then since then, since the middle of March, earlier this week, we had a price of $3. So that's a 300% rally in the space of 2 months. The other dairy products have appreciated, whey, non-fat milk and butter, but not to the extent of cheese. And it's been a huge, blessing to our dairy customers that when a world of hurt for a couple of months and all of a sudden they're really seeing record prices, the question is how are producers responding? And number two, how sustainable are these values?
First, do we know why is it? Because of government food and feeding programs or some other reason?
Well, you had a confluence of factors, Todd. I think obviously the food the food box program has taken a lot of cheese and distributed it. You also had some very astute foreign buyers that climbed all over this market when prices hit $1. And so we're trying to fulfill a tremendous amount of export business. And even though the closure of a number of away-from-home eating establishments has weighed on dairy demand, particularly butter, those establishments that are still open are very cheese-heavy-oriented restaurants, pizza, burgers, fast casual. That, along with the huge demand, retail demand of the cheese in the supermarkets, is really, you know, single-handedly boosted that market tremendously.
California is the number one dairy-producing state in the nation, has been for some time after it took over from Wisconsin. Are the dairy herds able to maintain themselves there?
Yeah, well, you had what happens when prices crashed. You obviously you had the well-publicized cases of people dumping milk because the processors just couldn't take all the milk. They lost an awful lot of demand. And furthermore, it takes time for these plants, these processing plants, shift their order flow. In the case of cheese, you know, the big 50-pound bags of shredded orders completely disappeared. Instead, there was a huge demand for like 8 pounds to 16-ounce retail packages. So that was problematic. I think dairy customers, the immediate response of my dairy customers to start culling some of the tail enders, the lower producing cows, cut back from 3 times to 2 times milking, and then change the ration, cheapen up the ration, and make it less energy dense for cows who have left milk to be able to save some money in the feed cost. Well, all of a sudden, things have completely turned around, and now they want to produce as much milk as you can. The national slaughter rate has slowed dramatically as people are hanging on to their cows. Prices of springers have really popped as people want to add to their herd. And people are trying to enhance the rations now, but it takes a while. You can't, cows don't immediately respond to a change in the ration. And so it's going to take a while. So there's some concern, even though you're going to start to see cow numbers grow, milk per cow may not increase as rapidly as you think. I think producers are already responding to this. And the question is, we are already getting tremendous pushback from a number of commercial retail accounts. These are record cheese prices. We've never had this, even when the economy is robust. So I think a lot of people feel this is very unsustainable. I think a lot of producers smartly have engaged in risk management, either through the Farm Bureau program, futures and options, or some of them have some of their processes and co-ops have also helped them out in that regard.
Bringing this here to the Midwest, and it will be somewhat arbitrary, I think, but demand is demand for commodity crops, and of course, dairy will be consuming commodity crops. Do you see herd sizes increasing? What influence might that have? And have you thought very much about, from your feed side, I'm sure, what this means about your needs in the coming year?
Well, I think that here in California, you had, continued consolidation in the dairy industry. It started out here and it spread to other areas. You know, it won't be, maybe in just another 5 years, where it'll be rare to see a California herd less than 1,000 cows. I think that as speaking for Western Milling, our feed demand has really picked up quite tremendously. Our customers are, as I said, are doing quite well. We work with some of the larger operators, and so they saw the downturn in prices. They now saw the downturn in cow values as an opportunity to expand their operations. Even though you have a lot of challenges there in California with regard to land, air, and water restrictions, high cost of labor, increasing electrical bills, commodity bills. But as I said, I think that here in California, you know, the big get bigger, and that's certainly the mantra for the past 20 years. And, you know, we're sort of capitalized, to work with those producers. And as I said, there's other people who view this sudden enhanced returns in dairy is perhaps an opportunity to get out.
Ellen Dearden, you've been listening to this. I know you and Chuck Shelby both follow the livestock industry relatively closely, beef cattle in general, but dairy cattle too, I'm sure. What's your thought process as it relates to livestock in the United States? And demand from that sector for corn in particular?
Well, we have certainly seen cattle demand pick up. You know, typically we think that July is a poor month for beef demand, but it has remained relatively stable, and we've certainly seen a big market up on the board. I noticed today that we've got feeder cattle prices back up to pre-COVID levels. We've got the live cattle on the nearby month up at 16-week highs. We've certainly seen good demand, and it's been hard to source what I would call the right kind of cattle on the dressed side of beef cattle to meet that demand. So we've got kills that are inching back up, and we're not quite to pre-COVID kill levels, but the demand seems to be relatively strong. I wonder whether that will continue, the good demand will continue on the domestic side, when, if at the end of the month, that $600 a month stipend that's given on top of unemployment. I think that's gone a great way for people who are unemployed right now to support their food bills.
Chuck Shelby, you have anything to add?
Well, I think I'll look at the hogs, and the hog market has just taken an extreme beating in the last month or so. It does look like maybe it's turning the corner, and we've seen what we need to see happen. China's starting to take large quantities and sending pork over there. So hogs continue to struggle. Cattle have had a nice recovery, but over time, hopefully the demand from China will pick up enough to help the hog market recover.
Just offhand, I made note over the weekend that the local Sam's Club had pulled its meat case section. I did not ask how or even if they were doing reconfiguring or just an update of the cases in general, but I did make note that there seemed to be more prepackaged, ready-to-eat or nearly ready-to-eat meat products in the rest of that space. I guess it could be part of the supply chain configuring itself for a longer version of COVID-19 and people not eating out. That would go along, Joel, with your comments about the cheese supply.
Right. Because on the other hand, you know, butter is consumed much more at the higher end restaurants, and that's really suffered, butter consumption. And so you had divergent action, you know, in both the Class 3 and Class 4. I should just mention off the side, one of the things I do is also I'm a merchandiser, and I merchandise more mill run, mill feed than anyone in the state of California. And very similar to what happened at the end of March and the beginning of April, I'm already getting indications from my suppliers that flour orders are being canceled and my mill run loads are being pared back. And I think a lot of it has to do with these recent shutdowns of restaurants, likely delayed school openings that I think is going to have an impact on flour demand, because retail flour demand only accounts for 2-3% of consumption.
That brings me to you, Aaron Curtis, because you asked about demand and what that might look like going forward. So we're talking about all kinds of demand structures for commodities that are fed to livestock. The other big usage area, of course, is ethanol. What's your view of that as we make our way through the summer months? COVID is surging again. Places like California, as we just heard, are beginning to shut down.
Yeah, we continue to see the weekly numbers continue to show some improvement. We saw the 11th straight week here on Wednesday of an increase in production. We estimated about 95 million bushels of corn were used for ethanol the week prior, which puts us kind of on par with what we need per week now to finish out the rest of the marketing year to meet this adjusted goal that the USDA continues to adjust down in these monthly reports. But I think that the resurgence just probably has a little bit of a concern for the ethanol and how that reacts. We've seen most places come back online since the dip we saw in March and April. There's just a handful of plants that aren't back up and running, but most are back on back online. Some are running at different capacities than others, of course, but we have seen that increase. Ethanol stocks are much more manageable now than they were late March. We continue to see, with the exception of the week prior, we continue to see ethanol stocks on a week-by-week basis decrease. So that gives a little bit of more wiggle room here if we do start to see production slow down a little bit. But it has been a little bit of a brighter story the last few weeks, but it does cause a little concern here as we continue to move forward, because margins have increased. We have seen, though, in the past that if margins do start to dip, some of these ethanol plants just keep on producing. So we're going to have to continue to watch that, Todd. And then, of course, export sales, right? We've seen China back in the fold here. You know, their biggest sale or biggest buy they've ever had from the U.S. in one daily announcement. So that was good to see. The market didn't have much to say about that, kind of digested that pretty quickly and moved on. We did see another weekly corn auction from China, sold out again, another 4 million metric tons. So they continue to have an appetite domestically for corn, and sounds like trying to replace some of that with some import corn. And of course, Brazil and Argentina are probably going to come a little more online here as we move into the late summer, early fall timeframe. But good to see China back in, but the market has pretty much moved on from that pretty quickly, or at least the way we saw it this week.
Ellen Deardner, they, you suppose, using this corn to feed a rebounding Chinese pork production sector, or is ASF still a problem?
I would say they're using that corn, especially the auction corn, and my understanding is that is extremely poor quality. I was told it was worse than number three corn. But their pork production was only down 4.7% in the second quarter. So that says to me that they're rebounding, because they were down 40% for a while last year. And slaughter rates January to June were 251 million head. Think about that. And that's still down 20% from a year ago. But they're rebounding in their production rather easily. The herd seems to be down about 2.5% right now. And I'd say they certainly need corn, and they're trying to upgrade the quality of what they have in their state-owned reserves. I think USDA will have to increase corn import requirements for China on this August report.
By how much?
Oh, I think they're only at 7 right now, and I think they could go up a couple million metric tons.
Chuck Shelby, as you think about the number of bushels that are available in the United States carry out this year and next year, we have, you know, while it's not above 3 billion for the carry out at the end of next year anymore, we still have a lot of corn around. Is there enough demand to give us a rally in the corn market at this point in time? And in that same breath, maybe you could talk about what you think the average yield might be after the rainfalls we've had in the last week is across the United States.
Well, it was a little bit disappointing to see the corn market not react to a record China purchase. But on the other hand, I think we have to say it was extremely helpful, because if that had not occurred, where would the market go with fairly widespread rainfall across areas of the Corn Belt? So it's encouraging. I think it's a positive in the long run to help keep supplies in check. On the other hand, USDA's at a pretty large yield at in the 178 area. Ratings are pretty high. I know there's some problem spots around, but it looks like the forecast coming up for next week also is encouraging with some rain around. I know areas have been dry, but when you look at the timing of these rains, sometimes you can make up for lack of rainfall if the rains come at a critical time, which we're entering into tasseling, pollination, and grain fill. So I look going forward, I think the crop probably is increasing in size, especially if we get rain next week. So it's a positive to see demand increasing, and especially from China. But on the other hand, we're kind of in concerned about increasing the yield and kind of expect that to occur in the August report.
So here at Eastern Illinois in Champaign County, I had 2.9 inches over the last week. I had more than that. I had 3.4, counting the half inch from last night. What have you had in the last week there where you are?
We've had probably an inch and a half to an inch and three quarters. But in Indiana, as you progress to the east, there's an area in central Indiana that has not really had hardly any rain in the last 6 weeks. So there are areas that are still struggling. But again, the cooler temperatures, and so far they're okay. But I think you have to look at nationwide, and there's some areas around the country that are look at Iowa and look at some of Minnesota, some extremely good potential in some of those states. So I think, again, timing of rainfall and temperatures are extremely important. Doesn't look like we're going to have those extremely hot temperatures that were predicted for a while by some of the weather models. So I think the corn crop in most places is still on track to have a very good yield.
Ellen Dearden, the drought monitor on July the 14th showed your area near Peoria as one of the driest in the state. In fact, I think there was a moderate drought in a very small area there. I don't recall for sure whether that was the case now or not, but apparently that changed in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, we had really prodigious rains fall in the Morton area yesterday in the 5.5-inch range. To the south of us was down around an inch and a half to 2 inches. So it was just kind of a freakish deal from here and headed north. And that kind of ran out of steam. But we were very dry going into that, and very thankful for this rain.
Will it do what Chuck Shelby has suggested, that it came at the right time, or have you just had so much of a lack of rain that you may have a hurt yield there?
I think that it came at the right time because the majority of the corn in this area has just shown silks in the last few days. We had tassels, but not a lot of silks. So I think it came at an awfully good time.
Aaron Curtis, what did farmers do? I want to switch to old crop. As we were moving into the higher prices prior to WASDE last week, and how much do they have left for old crop corn to sell?
We still estimate probably around 15%. It could be up to 20% in some parts of the Midwest, but 15% is kind of the rough guess across the Corn Belt on average. Todd, we did see some active movement on old crop up until that report. Once that came out, market went down double digits, and then, of course, continued Sunday night and Monday of this week on the lower track. That just shut it off again. So it's been pretty quiet here for the last week or so, and it looks like, you know, September corn probably needs to get back up in that 340 to 350 area to kind of get the farmer engaged. Otherwise, we're going to continue just to see stuff trickle out for money needs or until the elevator kind of makes the farmer make a decision on some of this stuff that's still in storage. But about 15%. New crop is just pretty much non-existent, Todd. I mean, less than 5% across the Corn Belt of new crop on the book. So even on this little bounce we saw these last few weeks, the farmer still wasn't very active on new crop. So we still got a lot of new crop corn to buy. And the fear is, I think, we probably just won't see much movement unless until we get to either harvest across the scale or if this market would rally. I think new crop ownership is going to continue to be pretty light for the elevator system here as we move into harvest.
One final question for you, Joel, before we get the final word from everybody. Here in the Midwest, about May 1st and through the month of May into June, there was an awful lot of movement of automobiles again. I'm wondering whether that took place in California and if it's been restricted in the last week or so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as, miles driven, I mean, I think people were really starting to, as I said, really starting to, to move around. I mean, I was in Fresno County, just for 4 months. I hadn't left. And then a couple of weeks ago, we went down to Monterey County and they were in a much bigger lockdown. I mean, you had to wear masks there. All the beaches were closed over the 4th of July. The day after we left, all the restaurants closed. I think that the situation down in Southern California has really sort of spiraled out of control. It's a very serious situation, I think, in SoCal. Bay Area is doing, you know, quite a bit better, but 60 of the 80 counties, Newsom has shut down again. And so, you know, I think it's had an impact on miles driven, on patronage of restaurants and other facilities that closed my gym. There's just, as I mentioned before, my mill run loads are getting cut back because already, you know, companies are starting to, you're getting some flower cancellation. So I think, you know, we're definitely seeing signs of the resurgence of COVID, the state going backwards and increasing the number of restrictions. And I think this is, you know, a depressing impact on, you know, food and feed demand, you know, if it continues.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Ellen Dearden at AgriView in Morton, Illinois. I'll start with you.
Well, I would say that, you know, with China buying corn, it's a good sign because they usually are good value buyers, not just we buy it when we need it. So I like that.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, I think the upside continues to be somewhat limited, especially with some of the rain we've seen around. So really, as you look here at mid-July, for old crop anyway, you're going to have some sort of weather demand, weather concern again, or some sort of big demand news, and just kind of running out of time on both of those for old crop. So continue to look to clean up your old crop on any sort of rally here over the next few weeks.
Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities.
We saw the wheat market have an unexpected and pretty significant rally when the funds decided to become buyers of wheat. So I think the funds are extremely short corn. So there is potential out there in corn someday. We just don't know when it is. But opportunities will be there as we go forward, and we just have to take advantage of them the best we can.
I meant to let you talk about that a little bit, and I forgot this was the question you wanted to be asked. What is the influence of the funds in the marketplace?
Well, it's pretty tremendous when we have really light volume going on, and they've when the Chinese bought, everybody thought that would be a bullish sign and we'd go up, but the funds decided the rain was more important, so they were more aggressive sellers and outweighed the Chinese purchases. They want to be long soybeans. They continue to maintain that position, so that's a positive. But again, in the long run, we always know the funds flip their positions. So somewhere down the road, being extremely short corn, they will turn the corner and buy back their shorts.
And finally, Joe Carlin there at Western Grain Milling in California, your final word.
Well, it's nice to see this Chinese buying, but we're going to need some non-Chinese borrows. The USDA has set the bar very high, up 375 million in corn, up 400 in soybeans. So, I would think that Argentina and Brazil may have something to say about that also. So there you go.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. I thank our panelists for the day, including Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, Joe Carlin at Western Grain Milling, he's out of Fresno, California, and Chuck Shelby joined us from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.